The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's
most prominent sports columnists. Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A billion-dollar industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today we are joined by one of our favorite guests, an ESPN insider. He always has his finger on the pulse of the NFL and is consistently breaking news and stories. He's the one and only Adam Schefter. But before we get started with my pal Adam, I want to tell you about Kronos. Kronos knows that many organizations maintaining a modern workforce of hourly, full, and part-time workers, for them it can be a challenge. This is especially true for human resources professionals working hard to attract and retain all the best talent. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping on a single cloud-based platform. It's one specially designed to give HR professionals supporting a blended workforce a whole new level of confidence. With it, they have everything they need to tackle nearly any human resources challenge and are empowered to not just find and hire the right people, but to engage, motivate, and reward them every single step of the way. Learn more about Kronos HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them, because Kronos is at heart a people business, at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. Welcome back to the Mike Lupica Podcast. And our guest today is someone whose success I enjoy and appreciate as much as any, I don't call him a young guy, younger than me guy who has come along in the business during my time in it. It is Adam Schefter, who came out of the world of covering the pro football beat at the Denver Post. He comes off of Long Island. He has now become as well-known, I quote, information guy, but I just think of him as a reporter, as there is in the television business for ESPN. You see him during the football season, you feel as if Adam has moved in with you. But he also loves the NBA and has done some work for ESPN on the NBA. In addition to everything else, he wrote a wonderful book, which I urge you to buy if you have not read it, called The Man I Never Met, about the first husband of his wife who was killed on 9/11. And he joins me today. Good morning, Mr. Schefter.
Thank you for those kind words, Mr. Lupica. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, I've told you this to your face many times, not enough good things can happen to you personally and professionally to suit me. Adam, let's today, even though we've got our there's a lot to unpack in the NFL, because the NFL is never out of season now. Mm-hmm. But let's start with the NBA. And I will ask you simply enough, because I'm extremely engaged by this NBA final.
Yep.
Are you as engaged by it as I am?
Yeah, well, I've watched every minute of it, and I've watched basically just about every playoff game, and I love doing that. And yeah, I just think it's fascinating. In fact, I thought the Raptors really had the Warriors on the ropes there on Sunday night, and they let them off the hook there. And I don't know what enabled the Warriors, maybe just the grit of the Warriors, the greatness of the Warriors, to go on that 20-0 run to open the third quarter, but it really seemed like the Raptors had control that game in the first half. And you're watching the Warriors, you're saying, what's wrong with them? Like, they're just out of sync. They're not operating the same level. And I know they've made a living in this postseason of falling behind by double-digit deficits and coming back and winning games, but I felt like the Raptors had a chance to really deliver a blow where we would have spent these few days talking about what's wrong with the Warriors. Instead, I think everybody has kind of shifted their mindset to, okay, this looks like it's going to be business as usual. And that's because Golden State is so good and was able to come back the way it did on Sunday night.
You know, it's funny, but we're talking to my pal Adam Schefter on the Mike Lupica Podcast, and that's a perfect segue into what we saw in the second half, and especially during 6 minutes, which I believe may have won them another championship, is what is right with the Warriors, even on a night when we thought that a lot was wrong with the Warriors. No Kevin Durant. Klay Thompson finally leaves the game. Steph Curry is clearly not himself, even though it was never clarified for me after the game exactly what was wrong with him. And what we saw in that second half is the same, Adam, I'm not getting you into pro football yet, the same sort of athletic character that we have seen time after time and season after season from the New England Patriots. Well, and role players stepped up, but we saw, Adam, we saw everything that has made them great in this generation.
Yeah, and you also didn't lose the fact Kevon Looney, who has been a valuable backup, he goes out of the game with a collarbone injury that's going to sideline in the rest of these finals.
Yep.
He doesn't come back. One more loss for them to overcome. And so they've got to rely on Boogie Cousins to play 28 minutes when he played 8 minutes in the game one loss. And nobody thought he was going to be able to play that long at that high a level. Andre Iguodala, who looks so off in the first half, then rises up, as he so often has in the postseason, to help lead this team and bury that big three late in the game that was really the margin of victory. And so it's these older guys, old and new, like Boogie Cousins, new on the scene, Andre Iguodala, the old trusted veteran, to where all of a sudden they're just so tough to keep down, right? The Atlanta Falcons had the Patriots down until they didn't. And the Raptors had the Warriors down until they didn't. And there's something that makes these great franchises as resilient as any who have been in the sport in a long, long time, maybe ever. That's the way it sort of works. Like, the Warriors have been in the finals, five straight years?
5 straight years.
Yeah. There's a reason for that, right?
I mean, and they should, and Adam, they should be going for 5 titles in a row, because if Draymond hadn't gotten himself suspended that time, when they were getting ready to close the Cavaliers out in game 5, oh, by the way, in Oakland, they'd be going for 5 in a row.
Yeah, and that was the game where LeBron blocked the block that he had, right? He had that great block.
No, that was in game 7. That was in game 7 on Mr. Iguodala, where I believe he came from Market Street in San Francisco across the bay to block that shot. It's one of the greatest plays I've ever seen in the NBA Finals.
I agree. There are not many plays that I'm sitting there where I jump out of my seat. Oh, my God. And that was one of those plays. That was one of those plays when I watched that. It was a Sunday night. And so, again, you know, to beat a team like the Warriors, to beat a team like the Patriots, it takes an awful lot. It takes talent. It takes will. It takes discipline. It takes a full-on effort for the entire length of the game. And Toronto almost had it on Sunday night to where they had the 2-0 lead. And then, again, it just slipped through their fingers.
We're talking to Adam Schefter on the Mike Lupica podcast. And I was in the car yesterday, and I was somewhere on satellite radio. And somebody's saying that somebody had broke down social media posts. I don't know how the hell they do it. It's way beyond my pay grade. But that most of the country is not rooting for the Warriors. And listen, I get that the Raptors are a great story. I did a parting shot on our Sports Reporters podcast yesterday. Everything that we love about sports, you've seen from Toronto, from Canada, inside and outside that arena. So I get the underdog story. Okay. But man, Adam, what's not to like? Well, then maybe Draymond. What's not to like about the Golden State Warriors?
Well, you know what happened, Mike? I think when Durant went there, they almost became villains. And I think they were so beloved. Honestly, that team brought back my interest in the NBA, because, you know, I was so focused in my football world and my job. And then I started watching Steph and Klay and Draymond and those guys. Wow.
Playing a beautiful game of basketball,
yeah,
Adam.
The more you watch them, the more fun they were. And you know, even on the East Coast, you know, I enjoyed staying up to watch them when they were on the West Coast. And so I think everybody loved them. They were darlings. But again, it's the nature of our society where, like, we build people up, we build up teams, everybody jumps on, and then, you know, you tear them down, and then they get built back up again. And I'll bet you after this year, you know, if Durant leaves, which we think, and Boogie Cousins leaves, which we think, then all of a sudden next year people will kind of like the Warriors again, when it's back down to Steph and Klay and Draymond and the nucleus of the team that built up that team to begin with. And so I just think that when Durant went there, it was too much for people. They didn't like that. It was too much winning, too many stars, too much talent, too easy. And so people began to demonize them, even though they should have nothing but our great respect moving forward.
Talking basketball, which he loves to do with my pal Adam Schefter. One thing that I think has been debunked over the first two games of the finals, Adam, is that this cockeyed notion that the Warriors might be better off without Kevin Durant.
That is ridiculous, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
It's so funny.
Hey, I mean, but listen, you listen, coming from your world of pro football, you know how tricky hamstring injuries are. So are you confident that Clay is going to tee it up on Wednesday night for game three?
You know what's funny about that, Mike? We're taping this on Tuesday at 10 o'clock Eastern, roughly, right?
Right, right.
And so I'm listening to all these basketball writers say, oh, Clay's as tough as they come, which I don't doubt, and he'll be back on Wednesday night. I'm sorry. I'll be surprised if he's playing on Wednesday night. And I know they're listing him as questionable. But if you saw him gimping in the postgame, how is that guy playing Wednesday night? I mean,
It's a hamstring, Adam. And you know, listen, remember when LeBron hurt his groin and everybody said, oh, he'll be back in a week or two. No, it doesn't work like that. I don't care how tough you are.
Correct. And so he's not going to play on Wednesday. That's what I believe. Now, again, it's funny from my perspective, right? I'm not there. I'm not covering it, not as a reporter. And I'm just watching it from my spot. And I'm saying, I can't believe people think he's going to play on Wednesday night. I don't think he's going to play. I don't think he's playing. And I'll be really surprised if he does. Now, again, even if they were down 2-0, there might have been a little bit more chance. But, again, all you had to do was look at the video of him post-game, halftime, or when he wandered off, and then after that's not a guy that's playing Wednesday night.
We are talking with the great Adam Schefter on the Mike Lubica podcast. Much more of our conversation with Adam right after this from Geico. Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please stay with me, because if it doesn't confuse me, it's not going to confuse you. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company, of course, is Geico. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, damn it, I'm out of time. Adam, if he does not play Wednesday night, I listen. Yeah. Okay, now, you know.
No Clay.
No Looney.
Durant. No Looney. Those are three guys that play.
And I'll give you one other. Adam, I'll give you another one. We don't know, even though there's a fair amount of bounce back time, there's no way of knowing how Boogie bounces back after playing his first basketball and very serious basketball for the first time in, 45 days?
Yeah, well, but again, he did go 28 minutes, and he did get stronger, and he did look a little tired. But he's got, you know, listen, it's not, they're not playing back-to-back games here, you know, one night after another. He's got 3 days, Sunday night, Wednesday night, Friday night, Monday night. I mean, he's got time. I think he's waited his whole life to be in this spot, in this position. So I don't worry about him as much as I do some of the other guys that again, we know won't play and then we think won't play.
You know, I was thinking about Steve Kerr the other night, and I'm always when with super teams and heavyweight champion type teams like the Warriors, like the Patriots. Obviously, the frame of reference is Belichick, and I'm thinking, well, I can't compare Steve Kerr to Bill Belichick, and then I'm thinking, wait a minute now, if he wins this title, he's 4-1 in the NBA Finals. Bill's 6-3 in Super Bowls, and we know how fluid that number can be when you look at some of those endings. And you know, on both sides, by the way, the Giants games and the games they came back at
correct.
But for Kerr to make the play, and I thought it was a pretty bold play to put Boogie in the starting lineup. That to me was great coaching the other night.
Well, again, I think that he felt like his team needed a little bit of a spark, and by all accounts, Boogie had looked good in practice. His conditioning level was up. And they felt good about it. And I guess, you know, I wasn't that surprised. Like, I was a little surprised they didn't use him more in game one. And I think they just wanted to get a feel for how to work him back in, get him in a rhythm, get the lineup in a rhythm with him in there. And, look, you don't win game one. You want to win game two. And the guy's ready. Like, he's ready to go. So if you got this workhorse there, this stud, put him in. Let him play a little bit. And that's what they did on Sunday night. It turned out to be the right move, and I think he helped save the night and potentially the season.
It's interesting when you look at the NFL and the NBA, and we know how free agency has become as much a part of the narrative of the NBA as a great team like the Warriors and the soap opera in Los Angeles with the Lakers and all that stuff. But I can't think of many times in recent NFL history where you had a guy like Kawhi, who has clearly lifted a team and a city and a country to this moment where there's so much drama about whether he'll even be back. And I'm not comparing him to somebody who has the history that like Brady has with the Patriots, but
Mike, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm having dinner at the table, and I see something on Twitter that there's a report
that he bought a house in
Toronto.
Yeah.
The same guy who there was a report about him buying a house in LA in the fall.
Right.
So either Kawhi is accumulating real estate like he's playing Monopoly here, or there's some inaccurate reporting going on. I don't know what's going on here. Okay, but all of a sudden, that's become fair sport, is reporting on where a guy's purchasing real estate and trying to figure out whether or not he's staying in the city. Look, the guy is a tremendous player. You know, I'd love to see him wind up in New York with the Knicks. I think to be unbelievable, but I just think he's going to be in L.A. after the year. I think he's going to sign with the Clippers. That's what I believe. I don't know if he's going to have to take a loss on that home in Toronto that he allegedly bought. If that's even true or not, I have no idea whether it's real or not. You know, I mean, by the way, like, you know, I remember you brought up Denver. There were so many times where you heard about a guy was buying a house or moving there. Those to base anything off reports like that, and I don't know the reporter who said it. Maybe he's a tremendous reporter and very credible. Maybe not. I have no idea. But I'm saying those things usually, if you're trying to pin the hopes or figure out, forecast a guy's future off a alleged home, that's usually not solid ground for reporting, usually.
We're talking to Adam Schefter on the Mike Lubega podcast. All right. Basketball fan Schefter. Okay.
Yeah.
Someone who has spent time around the sport and loves the sport. Where do you honestly believe Kevin Durant's going to end up?
Listen, it really
sounds... How about the Clips if the K guys, at least two of the K guys, not Kyrie, because I'm not as interested in Kyrie as them. If the two K guys, Kawhi and Kevin, end up with Doc Rivers in L.A.?
You know, Mike, again, I'll say this. And again, I'm mocking the idea of real estate and whatnot, but I'm just curious. Why would Kevin Durant... his company take up office space in New York City this past, like, why did that happen?
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, like, do you think it's an inside deal that Rich Kleiman is his guy is somehow going to end up, you know, and by the way, there is historical precedent for that. Bob Myers runs a basketball operation with the Warriors. He is a former agent. Rob Pelinka, who may be the outgoing general manager of the Lakers, is a former agent. So it's not without precedent in the NBA, and Brody Van Wagenen is now the general manager of the Mets.
You know, again, and I think people come at these jobs from different walks of life. We've seen a lot of broadcasters going to front offices here, John Lynch doing it. Steve Kerr was a broadcaster before becoming a coach. And I think what I go to is this. You know, there are certain people that just have a natural greatness to them, that they have a Midas touch, that you can just see the way they handle people, the way they handle situations. And you say, if they're good at that, why... if they know the sport the way they do, would they not be good at this? And so,
well, Adam, I always said Parcells. I honestly believe Parcells could have shifted over to baseball. Red Auerbach could have shifted over and run the Boston Red Sox. I honestly believe that.
Good. And by the way, Bill Belichick, he could have coached something else. He could have probably been a great lacrosse coach for all we know.
Okay, I will tell you this about Belichick. I was at a spring training game the spring before last with Tony La Russa and Dennis Eckersley and Bill.
He loves La Russa. Him and La Russa were close.
So we're watching a game in Jupiter, Florida between the Red Sox and the Marlins. And at one point, somehow the subject of somebody who'd gotten traded came up. And Belichick looked at La Russa and said, Tony, in baseball, if a guy gets traded and he doesn't want to go, what happens? And La Russa looked at him and said, Bill, it doesn't work that way. He has to go. And Belichick said, okay, it's your sport, not mine. And I'm thinking, I do think his skills are transferable, but they might not have been transferable to baseball, Adam, okay?
Well, you know, I actually was around those two guys when they're having a conversation where La Russa invited Belichick to a spring training game. And I guess Bill was in the dugout. I may have some of the details wrong, but the point of this will be the same, Mike. And basically, all of a sudden, Bill is recounting a series in like the seventh inning. He goes, well, you had runners on first and third, and it was a 2-1 count, and the guy, you know, took the pitch, and you sent him, and I couldn't believe you sent him home. And I'm thinking, he remembers all these details from a spring training game from years ago. Until, like, you got to be kidding me. It was unbelievable.
One day I was in Jupiter and Buck Showalter is still managing the Orioles and Parcells and Ron Wolf came by because you know that Parcells and the old Packers general manager, Wolf, a great friend. And we the baseball just comes pouring out of Parcells. And Buck said to me later, I didn't even want to go out and manage the game. I wanted to stay in my office and continue to talk baseball and not football with Parcells.
You know, and again, I just think, you notice that, I've noticed that, you know, athletes love to be around musicians. They love to be around athletes from other sports. There's just a certain excitement. There's a certain joy. It's one of the reasons on a much, 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 much lesser level, I love being around the NBA. It's just different. It's fun. It's a welcome break from what you do.
It is different because there's simply, in your sport, there's simply not the kind of, not only player movement, Adam, but high-profile player movement all the time.
Yeah. It's just a welcome break for everybody, Mike. And you get to do everything all the time. So I guess you got the best of all worlds.
Well, I get to talk to you today. I'm talking to my buddy, Adam Schefter, on the Mike Lupica podcast. We have been talking about basketball. And by the way, again, I said this at the start of the podcast. If you haven't read a wonderful book about love and life and loss and courage, I urge you to go to your bookstore today, because I always ask you to support independent bookstores because they're the rock solid foundation of what we all do who write books. Or go to Amazon and get The Man I Never Met because it's a wonderful book. All right, let's shift to football. And again, I you know, when we're talking about big football games, I never say, hey, Adam, who do you think's going to win? I think one time on the radio.
I don't love doing that anyway because none of us really ever know.
No, we're in the business of information. And as Ryan says, we're in the business of information and rhetoric, not prognostication. Okay.
Yeah.
And I remember we had a funny moment one time on the radio where I asked you who you thought was going to win the NFC East.
Yeah.
Remember it was like, whoa. Now
listen, there are certain times you have a certain feeling and a certain team, like, boy, this team's going to be better than I think, or this team's going to be worse. But I never like, you know, here's the team that's going to win the NFC East, you know, because then that sometimes can turn into a headline and this guy's picking this team. And again, it's such an unpredictable, wild sport that changes on such a year-to-year basis.
Not that you would ever get into any trouble for making any kind of opinion, would you, Adam?
I like to basically silence my opinion. I kind of use my opinion. I treat it the way I do a marriage. I just kind of keep my mouth shut and let everybody else carry on with their business, Mike.
Okay. All right. Well, that is the foundation for what I'm about to have us talk about. Okay. Mm-hmm. What is your informed feeling about what Roger Goodell is eventually going to do about Robert Kraft? Because it's a tough, I mean, now he's a tough.
Hold on. Again, what do we know that he did wrong right now? What do we know? Is he?
Well, I mean, we know he did something skeevy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. A lot of people do a lot of things skeevy.
Yeah. But
is it
worse than I don't know? Is it worse than what Jim Irsay did, for example? And I know it's apples and oranges.
By the way, how about? I mean, what about again? I'm just if we look at the history of Jimmy Haslam's company.
Right.
There are people who plead guilty there. Like, is that wrong? It was his company.
Okay, yeah. Let's back up for a second, because to me, this is a fascinating conversation, mm-hmm. and these things happen often in the world of sports. Mr. Kraft, who, by the way, Adam, I have known since I was in college, okay? I've known him since he was in college. I loved his late wife. I first met him when he owned the Boston Lobsters of World Team Tennis. So I've known him that long. Okay. I've always had a good relationship for him. But after this all happens with the massage parlor, okay, mm-hmm. he issues an apology, and I'm thinking, an apology about what exactly? Because it was a nuanced, almost legal position. But I'm thinking, if you didn't do anything wrong, what are you apologizing for?
Well, and I think he also, I think there were people he spoke to shortly after it happened where he basically said, you know, he was going to be vindicated. And I think, you know, he really felt like that was going to be the case. And we'll see where this all goes.
You mean that it was being surveilled, unlawfully in Jupiter, Florida?
Yep. That also. So, you know, again, I don't know how it's going to play out from a legal standpoint, Mike. I don't know how it's going to play out from the NFL standpoint. Okay. So if the NFL says to Robert Kraft, we're suspending you, I'm making this up for three games, four games, you pick the number.
Okay? Let's make it a Deflategate-like. And by the way, make up your own joke there about deflating, inflating. You know what I'm saying, Adam.
Yes.
And let's say four games for the sake of your answer.
Okay, so they suspend him four games.
Right.
So he's on the sideline for four games. It impacts the Patriots absolutely zero. Zero. All it does is basically add another line onto the long and distinguished resume of Robert Kraft. Okay? And also served a four-game suspension. It's not unlike, really, the situation with the Patriots and Tom Brady. There's so much there. So many accomplishments that you mix in this one incident, and I'm not diminishing the incident and the embarrassment and the skeeviness of it all, okay? I'm just saying it's one thing.
And the subsequent public humiliation and occasionally flogging he has suffered.
And to me, that may be the worst price that he's – not maybe, that is the worst price that he's paid here. That's the worst price that he's paid here. Right,
if like, it's a great William Goldman, my late great writing hero mentor, used to say, he always used to say, okay, what's going to be in the first line of your obit? It might not be in the first paragraph of Kraft's obit, but it's going to be the second paragraph someday.
Will it make the second with everything he's done? I don't know that. It'll make it. It'll make it. It made his obit. Yes. Okay. But I don't know how high up there. I don't know. I think that's still being sorted out. But I think with everything that he's done, do you think, I mean, you know, it's kind of a morbid topic. Robert Kraft, who became
the great sport. All right, here, let me set this for you. Okay, I'll set this debate for you so you don't have to do it because, you know, I've done this longer than you have.
Thank you.
Okay. He has been not only the great sports owner of his time, mm-hmm. he has become as great a sports owner as there has ever been in the history of professional sports in this country. I honestly believe that. I can remember the day we were walking through the parking lot of his stadium, and I referred to him as the boss or the owner, and he said, no, I'm a caretaker of a public trust. And it was as good a definition of what guys like him are supposed to do as any ever. So I get all that, okay? But it's going to be hard for people to forget. And hopefully we're not going to have this conversation for another 20 years, okay? Yep. That he did hop into a Bentley or whatever the hell it was after getting his ashes hauled one day at a massage parlor in Jupiter, Florida.
Yeah, well, again... And like I said, I think that absolutely will be a part of the legacy. But I think that there's been so much in that legacy that it just, to me, I know it's easy to, or it's not as easy to picture it today. But when you look at everything that has been there and all that he's done for that area, like, have you ever gone up to Gillette Stadium and seen what they've done around that area?
The world, like, yeah, Patriot Place. It's un. I happened to be up there a couple of years ago. And you know this. Most of the time, you go to the game, you go to the game. You know, yeah. You have good parking. You go in, you get out, and you go in the stadium, okay? I was on a book tour, and I was going over to Jeff Kinney's amazing bookstore in Plainville, Massachusetts, okay? Yeah. And I really saw the scope. It's not Patriot Place. It's Patriot World out there, you know, 20 miles from downtown Boston.
And it was Patriot nothing. Out there.
Right.
He basically built a whole little town, a whole little city, a whole little whatever you want to call it. I mean, when you drove in and out of Foxborough before there, Mike, what was there?
Nothing. Oh, what a thrill that always was on Route 1.
It was a rundown area.
Right.
He's brought life to that area.
Yeah.
He's brought business to that area. He's brought jobs to that area. And again, I'm not here to defend. I'm just pointing out, like, yes, there was this incident that is embarrassing, that is going to be a part of his legacy.
Yeah.
But let's not confuse it with some of these other things that he's done over the course of his entire life that are incredible.
No, I listen, you know me, and all the times we sat together on the sports reporters and how resistant I have been, even when things were far more serious than this, of giving out what I call the media death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Because guys hand out, and we've got men and women in our business, hand out the media death penalty indiscriminately and sometimes irresponsibly. And it's a very tricky situation, especially, and we're going to move on from this because it sounds like inside baseball about football, because the legal situation in South Florida has gotten so murky.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think that's very well said. The media death penalty, I haven't heard you use that phrase, and you have some tremendous expressions. I'd add that one to the list, and I don't believe it's warranted in this particular case.
ESPN's ace NFL insider Adam Schefter is our guest on the Mike Lupica podcast. More of our conversation with Adam right after this from Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to do you do today. Okay, so all right, let me ask you another question, because I've got to get on to something far more serious than this, Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones.
When are you going to, you Adam Schefter, with all of your immense power in the sport of pro football, your the deep and abiding love you have for the game, when are you going to change the dumbest rule in professional sports about the coin toss in overtime in playoff games? Adam, you know this, three times now, with Aaron Rodgers, now with Patrick Mahomes, the best player in the sport that season became a spectator. And I don't want to hear, the defense had a chance to stop him. That has nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes, okay? A billion-dollar industry comes down to something as random as the flip.
Yeah, I don't like that either. And I know that they talk about health and safety, and that's what it's about.
Oh, please. Where's everybody going? It's one of the last games of the season. Where does everybody have to be?
Well, I'm in agreement with you, and I think that they should change that, and I think they're continuing to talk about changing that, and I think eventually it will get changed, but they're, for whatever reason, just not there yet.
You get your ass on the competition committee, okay? That's my mandate for my friend Adam Schefter today. All right, let's get to Adam Jones. All right, Adam, we're all watching the draft. Okay?
Yeah.
With the sixth pick in the 2019 NFL draft, the Giants select, there's always a little pause, Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
Okay. My jaw drops. My son Christopher, my oldest, I've got one Packer fan son, Zach. Alex and Chris are Giants fans, born and bred. They were in Indy the second time they beat the Patriots. Okay.
Yeah.
Christopher had to take another call. When he comes back and looks at his cell phone, he said, "Dad, I knew something bad it happened. Well, because I got a text from you, and he's got another crazed friend, Gaff. He said, yeah. Gaff and you texted me at exactly the same moment with a kind of a WTF text messages. Adam, what was your reaction when it happened?
There's a lot of things here, okay? And I think Giant fans hate the pick. And I will say this. The pick really reminds me of the Phil Simms pick. When they took, I believe they took him with the 6th overall pick, right? At Morehead State.
It was in there, yeah. And I don't remember what option. It's so long ago, I can't remember who Giants fans wanted them to take that year.
Well, again, I should really go back and look at that. But I'm just telling you, I think in his senior year, Phil Simms had something like 5 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. And they used the 6th overall pick in the draft and this quarterback from Morehead State that nobody was really talking, and people couldn't believe it. And I almost view the two quarterbacks in a similar way, two really smart, bright, talented guys. And when I spoke to people around the league about Daniel Jones, and let me also say this, like I know Giants fans, some Giants fans wanted Dwayne Haskins. Don't be mistaken. There were just as many teams that had Daniel Jones ahead of Dwayne Haskins as had Dwayne Haskins ahead of Daniel Jones. So there was a split there. Okay, so that's not the issue. The issue is the draft is about value. And I know Dave Gettleman has said, hey, I know two teams that would have taken him.
Oh, wait, so wait a minute, stop right there. Because with all due respect to Mr. Gettleman, okay, and I know John thought he was hiring another Ernie Accorsi. Well, guess what? There's only one Ernie Accorsi, okay? That's bullshit. And I'll tell you why it is, because since when are other general managers sharing information like that in the run-up to the draft?
Well, let me say this to you, okay? We can go over the list of quarterback needy teams.
And no, that's different. What I'm saying is he says he knows.
So I'm talking to these teams. Like, I'm just telling you for a fact on certain teams, okay? A fact. Denver was not taking Daniel Jones in round one, okay? At one point, they were looking at him. Okay? They were.
Okay, that's
fine. And at one point, I can tell you for a fact, they were off him, and they were off quarterbacks, and then shifted their thinking to where, I don't know why they changed, but they thought that Drew Lock was the guy that they wanted. So much so that they considered taking him at number 10 in the first round, and then traded back, held off, and wound up getting Drew Lock in round two. That takes
the guy Elway seems to have wanted.
That's the guy that he wanted. Now, listen, I'm just telling you about 2 weeks before the draft and talking to the Broncos, they were considering Daniel Jones in round. He was somebody that caught their attention. That's a fact, okay? And somewhere along the way, as they looked at more and more film and had more and more meetings and more conversations, they, whether it's right or wrong, that's a different topic, changed their thinking and decided to go in the direction of Drew Lock. They were never going, in the end, Daniel Jones in the first round. The Redskins at 15 wanted Dwayne Haskins. That was their guy.
Badly.
There were people in the organization who did like Daniel Jones. But the people who were turning in the card and making the decision were not going to pick Daniel Jones. So when we take Denver and Washington out of the mix, out of the conversation here, which we can, okay, was Cincinnati at 11 going to take Daniel Jones? Was Green Bay at 12 going to take Daniel Jones? Is there some other sleeper team that we don't know that probably had Daniel Jones with a high grade that was going to take Daniel Jones? I do not believe that in any way.
Right.
Okay? That's me. That's my opinion based on all the people that I've spoken to, okay? Now, again, if Daniel Jones turns out to be a Pro Bowl quarterback, I don't care whether they got him at 6, 16,
right. 100%.
26, or 196.
Yep.
It doesn't matter to me, okay? If that's your guy and you believe in him and he turns out to be what you thought, great! Then Giant fans shouldn't have any issue with it whatsoever. But I think that they're always going to be measured. Number one, you're going to have Daniel Jones compared to Dwayne Haskins because they're both in the same division. They both went around the same slot, and the Giants passed on Haskins, whether that's right or wrong, for Daniel Jones. You're always going to have Josh Allen, the defensive end that Jacksonville took at 7, who probably would have been the Giants' choice at 6. You're going to have basically Josh Allen and Daniel Jones measured up against Daniel Jones now, and Dexter Lawrence.
Adam, you have said what I've been saying that night, okay? There's no way that they couldn't have had both. There's no way that between 6 and 17, Daniel Jones wasn't still going to be on the board.
Correct.
And now, if Dwayne Haskins is what I believe he's going to be, and again, it's a crapshoot for everybody, okay? They're going to have him sitting in their own division the way Sam Darnold, who I believe is the real deal, is going to be in their own division the way Sam Darnold's going to be in their own building for the next 10 years.
Yeah, you know, Mike, I'll say this. Again, there are so many ways you can look at it. The year before, as you mentioned, they pass up Darnold for Barkley. Barkley's a great player. Boy, is he great. But if Sam Darnold continues to develop, then it's going to be, could you have had Sam Darnold and you pick the guys in the 19 draft? Could you have gone Josh Allen and then Daniel Jones? And the Giants traded up into the back end of the first round, pick number 30, to draft the cornerback. And we'll never know, but I'm not convinced that Daniel Jones wouldn't have been there at 30 also.
Let me just say this about Saquon Barkley. Everything you said about Saquon Barkley, I agree with, okay? But let me say something I've been saying since the last NFL draft. Mm-hmm. As transformative a player as he was, you tell me all the running backs who ran their teams to the Lombardi Trophy. Don't tell me Emmitt Smith because they had Michael and Troy, okay? Mm-hmm. Terrell Davis did it one time, and even though it wasn't John Elway's best day, he still had John Elway, okay? Mm-hmm. If a transformative all-time Hall of Fame runner can run you to the Lombardi Trophy, how come Barry Sanders never did?
Well, listen, as important as running the football still is, the league has evolved. And it's more of a ball control passing league than it ever has been before. And so I don't want to de-emphasize the importance of a running back, but why is it that for years and years, talent evaluators teams didn't take the running backs high? Why is it that running backs today are not paid what quarterbacks and even wide receivers are? Why is it that the passing yards have exploded and the running yards haven't? Like, the league, that's just what it is today. It doesn't mean that you can't win with a great running back. I can give you great running backs that have won the Super Bowl, Mike. We've seen it happen. Franco Harris, right? They won with him in Pittsburgh. Roger Craig was a really good running back. Emmitt Smith, as you mentioned.
No, that's not what I'm saying, Adam. What I'm saying is there's this idea with the Giants and Gettleman that you can get a great quarterback any time or any year you want to. It's simply not true.
No, that is not true. That is not true. And, again, it comes back to picking the quarterback that you believe in. And that's why, again, if Daniel Jones is the guy that they have a conviction on, then that's great. Like, I don't have any problems that you wound up getting him. But I do think that they could have gotten him at 17. I think there's a chance, we'll never know, that they could have gotten him at 30. Or you know what? Maybe they would have to trade up to 26 or 7 or 8, whatever it is, to go get that guy. And the draft could have gone a different way. You could have gone Sam Darnold the year before if you liked him enough.
Yep.
So there's a million ways to chop this up. And I can assure you this, right, Mike? Living in the New York area, it will be chopped up over and over again.
It's going
to
be chopped up. It's going to be chopped up over and over. Dave Gettleman clearly sold John Mara on this idea. This was a constituency of one. I don't care who else was in the room. This is Dave Gettleman. And I'll say this again, Adam, and I've been saying this for a long time. You just look at the way, you know, the old football guy, he thought he was getting another Ernie. Well, there's only one Ernie, okay? And Dave Gettleman, he probably bought himself some time unless Daniel Jones becomes the quarterback this year. But if he's wrong, he will lose his job over this draft choice.
Well, it'll take a little bit of time.
Yeah, he bought himself a fair amount of time because all of a sudden you're hearing, nobody else drafts these quarterbacks.
Here's the other issue with taking Jones at 6. Here's the other issue, okay? And I believe it's a real issue. You take him at 6. People now think of Daniel Jones as the 6th pick in the draft.
I know.
As opposed to him being, let's just say, the 2nd or even 3rd first-round pick of the Giants. Now, even if they had gone Josh Allen, Dexter Lawrence, trade up for Daniel Jones, okay, there would be more focus and attention on Daniel Jones than the other two guys, and that's fine. But there would not be quite as much pressure. Just The idea of being the same, there's a certain expectation that comes along when you are picked that high, or even just in the first round. But when you're that high and the people in the New York area were starving and you traded your most electric player, whether that's the right or wrong move, we'll see. That's a lot to put on that young man's plate. Now, I know that he can handle it. And I know that that's part of this, that this guy's makeup and disposition is such that he's the ideal guy for that role. And if he can handle it, then that's great. Then they nailed it. But there's a lot that we're going to unpack. There's a lot we're going to be watching here. And it's going to be very interesting to see how it all transpires in the seasons to come.
I'll give you my last thought on the Giants, who I grew up rooting for in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I've said this for over a year now. If the Jets are right about Sam Darnold, the Giants were wrong about Saquon Barkley, and I don't care if he gains a gazillion yards.
I agree with that. I agree with that. No argument from me there. Sam Darnold is a part of this conversation too, and always will be.
Thank you for doing this today.
I had fun. I appreciate it. Anytime, you know that.
I love talking about sports with you, all sports, and maybe the next time I have you on, we'll talk about baseball.
I loved baseball growing up. I watched every pitch of every Yankees game growing up. I have some friends now with the Mets who I love dearly, but I just it has not grabbed me the way that football and basketball have.
You just stay with football. You get on the competition committee. You change the overtime
and get that overtime rule passed.
You get that taken care of, and we're good. Okay.
I will do my darndest to get that taken care of, Mike.
Thanks for doing this today, pal.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Great Adam Schefter on the Mike Lubega podcast. I just love talking to this guy about almost anything. Read his book. Follow him on ESPN. This is why we're doing this podcast twice a week. You hear me say this all the time, but it's true. It's this kind of conversation that flies across 45 minutes. Go find us on Stitcher and Spotify and wherever you find your podcast. Continue to download. Continue to subscribe. And we'll talk to you on Thursday, everybody.
The Mike Lupica podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lupica podcast. Click on the Mike Lupica podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.